Good morning. This meeting will come to order. Welcome to the January 16th, 2026 regular meeting of the Local Agency Formation Commission. Our clerk today is Erica Major, and I'd like to also thank SFGov TV for broadcasting our meeting today. I'm Commission Chair Jackie Fielder, joined by Commission Vice Chair Williams, Commissioner Sevier, and Commissioner Singh. Madam Clerk, can you please call the roll?
On the call of the roll, Commissioner Singh?
Here.
Singh present. Commissioner Sevier? Sevier present. Commissioner Williams?
Present.
Williams present. Commissioner Fielder?
Present.
Fielder present. You have a quorum.
Thank you. Madam Clerk, please call item two.
Would you like me to make the communications?
Yes. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. LAFCO is convening hybrid meetings that allow in-person attendance and public comment while still providing remote access and public comment via telephone. Public comment will be taken on each item on this agenda. Those attending in person will allow to speak first, and then we will move to our telephone line. When connected, you will hear the meeting discussions, but you will be in muted and listening mode only. When your item of interest comes up and public comment is called, those joining us in person should line up to speak near the curtains, and those on the telephone line should dial star 3 to be added to the speaker line. Please remember to turn down your television and all listening devices. You may also submit public comment via email to myself at erica.major@sfgov.org, or you may also send your written comments via post to City Hall, 1 Dr. Carlton B. Goodlett Place, Room 244, San Francisco, California, 94102. If you submit written public comment, it will be forwarded to the commissioners and made part of the official record. Madam Chair, that concludes my comments.
Thank you. And Madam Clerk, please call item two.
Item two is the approval of the LAFCO minutes from the November 21st, 2025 regular meeting.
Thank you. Do any commissioners have any changes to the minutes from the November 21st, 2025 regular meeting? Seeing no names on the roster.
Through the chair, Khalid did submit a request to update item number 7 on the minutes to update some of the language.
Understood. Do we need a motion for that?
Yes.
All right, so moved to amend the minutes as noted by Executive Officer Samurai for item 7.
And is there a
seven.
Second?
Second.
Sevier or Williams? Sevier, okay. And on that motion made by Commissioner Fielder, seconded by Commissioner Sevier, Commissioner Singh? Oh, actually you're an alternate, sorry, my bad. Commissioner Sevier. Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams.
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder.
Aye.
Fielder, aye. You have 3 ayes.
Thank you. The motion passes. All right. And we need public comment on this item still, correct?
Right. We'll need to rescind the vote.
Move to rescind the vote.
And on the motion to rescind, Commissioner Sevier? Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder?
Aye.
Fielder, aye. And we are now opening up to public comment for item number 2, that is the meeting minutes approval. Would anyone like to speak in the chamber? Seeing none, we'll move to our remote call-in line. We have 1 caller, but 0 callers in the queue to speak. And going back to the motion, moved by Commissioner Fielder and seconded by Commissioner Sevier to add the amendments to the November 21st, 2025 meeting. Commissioner Sevier? Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder?
Aye.
Fielder, aye. You have 3 ayes.
Thank you. The motion passes. And we shall close public comment as well.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing no names on the roster, public comment is closed. All right. Madam Clerk, please call item 3.
Item number 3 is the Clean Power SF updates.
Yep. Okay. Good morning, commissioners, members of the public. My name is Cheryl Taylor. May I please have the slide deck? Okay, great. Thank you. I'm here today to provide the update on Clean Power SF's update since the last time we met with you in November. I'd like to say also that I am joined by Rates Administrator Matthew Freiberg. Matthew will provide an update on Clean Power SF rate making. But to today's agenda, we'll cover our usual update on customer enrollment and service statistics, as well as news on our customer programs. Matthew will provide an update on the proposed Clean Power SF rate reduction that will be presented to the San Francisco Public Utilities Commission on January 27th, and we'll wrap up with an update on our gas decommissioning efforts as part of the California Public Utilities Commission proceeding. So on to enrollment and service statistics. We continue to successfully serve our customers. Participation remains strong and steady. We have about a 95% retention rate since program inception in 2016. Our Super Green participation, which is our 100% renewable product, that participation has been stable, with usage growing to about 19% of our annual retail sales. And for our customer programs update, we've been at steady state since, again, we last reported to you in November. As a reminder, our programs provide services or incentives for customers to transition away from using greenhouse gas emitting energy, reduce or shift their energy consumption during peak periods, and to balance their electric bill payments over time. On this last point, I would like to note that our budget billing program, which has been operational as a pilot for about 5 years, is now available to any customer who is enrolled in PG&E's similar program. It's virtually open to all customers. The budget billing enables our customers to even out their bill payments over the year by averaging their monthly payments. This helps customers to avoid seasonal spikes, which San Francisco ratepayers typically experience in the winter months. Now I'll turn the presentation over to SFPUC Rates Administrator Matthew Freiberg to provide an update on Clean Power SF's proposed rate decrease. And I'll say on Matthew's behalf that he'll be happy to address any questions you have about this rate action directly after his presentation. So, Matt, take it away.
All right. Thanks, Cheryl. So before I jump into the proposal, I want to provide a little bit of context about what's been happening in the rate space around Clean Power SF. So those of you who have been following Clean Power SF rates for the last few years may recall that from fiscal years 23 through fiscal years 25, we steadily increased rates. Those rate increases were driven by a need for us to comply with our new financial policy of achieving 180 days cash on hand reserve. The purpose of that policy was really to serve as a buffer against rate volatility in the power markets, which we've been experiencing, especially after the global instability in power markets during the war in Ukraine. Since then, power rates have stabilized. And in fact, at the end of fiscal year 25, we actually achieved the 180 days cash on hand target. And we were projected to watch our fund balances continue to grow year over year, even without any further adjustments in rates over the following years. This year, we're now seeing power markets are actually coming in lower than we had originally expected. So power prices are lower. Our power sales are also a little bit lower, or power purchases in general are a little bit lower. Together, that's resulting in a growth of our fund balance faster than we had originally projected. And as I mentioned, we were taking a wait and see approach, holding rates flat, which presents an opportunity for us to decrease rates. PG&E on January 1st updated their own rates. And you may recall that Clean Power SF, we manage the generation portion of a customer's bill, but we're still inextricably linked from PG&E. Our customers still pay delivery and transmission charges to PG&E. And as of January 1, the charges that go to PG&E, but mainly the power charge and difference adjustment, as well as the delivery and transportation fees, both went up by a good margin, which is ultimately resulting in the typical residential customer seeing an increase in their power bills of about $11 a month, or about 12% increase in their bills without us touching our rates at all. As you know, you've heard from staff across Clean Power SF and SFPUC, and you know that affordability is central to our financial planning process. So that's really the core driver of this recommendation, is that our power prices are a little bit lower, but we're also seeing our customer bills going up as of January 1. This next slide helps illustrate the drivers of the PG&E bill increase. On the left, you can see the residential PCIA from 2023 through 2026. These are calendar year dates. And you can see there's been some volatility. PCIA has been like a factor on customer bills. But you can see as of January 1st this year, there was about a 400% increase in PCIA, which is having a significant impact on customers. You can also see that PG&E has steadily been increasing their delivery costs as well. And the increase this year is about another 6% increase in delivery costs. So here's the proposal that we have. On March 1st, we're proposing a mid-year decrease to Clean Power SF generation rates. Again, we have fund balance on hand to help buffer from the lost revenue. So you'll see that in the chart. You see that those bars are going down steadily. That's us using fund balance to offset the loss of revenue. The proposal itself is a 25% decrease in residential and large commercial customer rates. Those are the two customer classes that are most significantly impacted by the changes in PCIA and delivery charges. But then all other customers are also experiencing a similar are experiencing impacts as well. So we're proposing a 20% decrease to all other rates. Again, this would go into effect on March 1st. What comes with this rate decrease, though, is that we also are going to have, we're going to be burning through fund balances faster. So starting fiscal year 28, so as early as July 1, 2027, we will have to start rebounding rates back up to keep up with the projected growth in expenses. These are just projections. Things will change, and we'll keep tracking this, and we'll inform you of our future changes when we get ready to actually propose those actual increases. The other things that we might be looking at, you may be aware that we're in the middle of a power rate study. The plan was originally for rates to change on July 1 of 2026. So we may still come back with some rate structure changes that come out of our rate study, but those will be revenue neutral, meaning that Clean Power SF will not generate any additional revenue from those rate structure changes. And that is what we have here on the rates.
Thank you so much. Colleagues, any questions, comments? Are you also going to continue the presentation, or?
No, I'm just, I have to go after this, so. Okay. Cheryl said I would answer questions, so I'm just
Commissioner Williams.
Could you maybe walk it back a few steps and explain it in layperson's terms? I'll say I probably understood about 23% of them.
Okay. So which piece would be useful?
I guess just a good summation of the presentation. I'm trying to understand the impact and the plan, and I don't know, I saw like a good dip for what, 180 days to like cover those costs, and then I saw like a good increase from that. I guess there's just a lot to process. So.
Sure, yeah, it's definitely an information-rich slide. Can you bring the slides back up one more time? Yeah, so what you're seeing on this chart here, the purple bars reflect the ending fund balance each fiscal year. So the first bar right here is for end of fiscal year 26, and we're proposing the rate decrease of 25 to 20%, depending on which customer class you're in. And you can see that our ending days cash on hand is projected to be about 262 days. So we're well above the 180-day minimum. Or the 180-day target. And that's what that dashed yellow line represents, is that's our target fund balance of 180 days. And you can see that grows and kind of like fluctuates year over year as like our overall expenses change year over year. The black line is our minimum fund balance. So our financial affordability policy, or not our affordability policy, our financial reserve policy states that we will not go below this line in any rate setting year. So you can see that we've been setting our rate plan. And again, these are all just kind of draft numbers. Everything outside of fiscal year 26 is a projection. But what we're doing here is we're trying to set rates to reduce rate burden as much as possible, but also stay within the confines of our policy, which says do not go below 150 days. Try to stay at 180 or above. But if you go below 180, you can go below 180 for 3 years. It gives us a bit of flexibility. So that's what you're seeing here, is that we dip below that yellow line no more than 3 years. And the idea there is that we are accepting a little bit of fund balance risk to keep rates as low as possible in the near-term years. And then what you'll see, what we don't have here is a bill impact chart. It's something I do have in the presentation that's going to the commission on the 27th. But you'll see that there's a pretty, right now, or as of December of this year, our rates were, or the combined bills were slightly higher than PG&E to begin with. With this change in PG&E rates, we're seeing the PCIA growing as much as it is, and they also decrease their generation rates marginally. We're seeing a really big gulf between the bills between our customers. So we're trying to shrink that down to something that is a little bit closer to what we're experiencing right now. And our projections are showing the PCIA difference between what our customers pay to PG&E and what PG&E customers pay. Right now, PG&E customers actually have a negative PCIA. So they're getting a bit of a bill credit. We're expecting that to level off in the coming years, and our bills will be almost identical moving forward. I hope that helps.
Yes, thank you so much.
Commissioner Sevier.
From December to so that went into effect January 1st.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So that is now that increase in PCIA is in effect as of 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Thanks. I'll restate some of my preamble here just so the folks online can hear me. But I have two questions. One's about predictability and one's about affordability. And I was noticing the really rapid increase in the PCIA charge, and the PCIA charge is the charge that PG&E levies on us because we run the Clean Power SF program and we're no longer buying power from their grid. And I think my question is whether or not achieving public power, the campaign that you guys are running to actually separate from PG&E, would enable you guys to have more predictable rates. I think the impact on customers and the people of San Francisco is that it's hard to manage like their daily expenses or their monthly expenses when things go up and then they go down. And of course, it puts a burden on you guys to have to explain exactly why. And I think, as Commissioner Williams demonstrated, it is hard to, even for knowledgeable folks like us, to follow along. So I think my question is, do you think that having our own public grid and being separate from PG&E would enable higher levels of predictability in terms of what rates look like for SFPUC?
Yeah, I believe that owning our own grid would create greater predictability. It gives us control over all aspects of setting rates. We wouldn't be beholden to shifts from PG&E, shifting costs from generation to distribution. We wouldn't have PCIA as a factor in our bill. And we'd also be able to tap into other resources that the broader PUC can provide. I think that's something that people are looking at, but that is outside of the scope
sure.
of what I work
yeah.
on.
Yeah, thanks. I was just curious yeah. about the connection there. On affordability, I noticed that you guys are going to decrease rates differently for different customer classes. Can
yes.
you talk to me a little bit about that? And I'll say the reason that I'm curious about this is that we know that from Cheryl's presentation in our last LAFCO meeting that about 12% of San Francisco residents are on bill assistance, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's an even smaller sliver of that customer class. But I'm wondering if you've One, I'm wondering how you decided to make different adjustments for different customer classes. Mm-hmm. And then two, I'm curious whether or not you modeled what it might look like to offer higher levels of bill relief for lower income customers that we know are on bill assistance.
Really good question.
Thanks.
Yeah, so there were a lot of different considerations that went into the decrease. Do we do a flat decrease across all customers? Do we do something that's a little bit more targeted? Ultimately, when we set our rates, when you look at Clean Power SF rates, our rates are, because PG&E does billing for us, our rate structure has to look exactly like theirs. There are certain levers that we can pull. I mean, we certainly control the dollar per kilowatt, right? Like we control the dollars, but the actual structure itself has to mirror theirs. And when we're doing cost of service, we try to set our cost of service by customer class and set the rates on each tariff. So within residential, there are multiple rate tariffs that customers can join on. ETOUC is the most common, but we have a multitude of additional rates in there. Our low-income discount program is a percentage off of the existing bills. But to avoid the complexity of adjusting tariffs within each customer class and throwing off the work that we had done in previous rate studies, we made the decision that we would do this at a customer class level. Mm-hmm. So that 25% discount is felt by all residential customers, but the low-income customers will feel that as well. Now, the differentiation between individual customer classes, we then looked at how the changes in PG&E rates are impacting different customer classes. Again, we have a large number of rate tariffs, so we did look at it at a tariff level, but it gets quite complicated when you look at it at a tariff by tariff level. It's a lot easier for us to look at, okay, well, which customer classes were heavily impacted? So the residential and the large commercial were the ones that had the most significant burden and the biggest differentiation between our rates and PG&E rates following this change in PG&E rates. So we offered them a slightly greater decrease to bring them on parity.
Thanks. I think that was a smart choice, thinking about just like the makeup of who SF PUC customers are for electricity in the city. So let me ask probably what you'll think is the same question in a different way. And
okay,
you can tell me, like, Is there a rule about how these funds go back to customers? Meaning, does it have to be like all refunded through rates? Can SFPUC use some of it to, say, make more funds available for the low-income discount program? So moving some of the reserve into a program budget versus a rebate to customers through rates.
So the mechanism that we're using is just lowering the rates. There isn't actually like a refund. And so when I say that we're using, when I say we're using fund balance, that's more of like the accounting exercise at the end of the year. Like,
yes,
we're bringing in less revenue than our costs are going out. So we're drawing down that bank account to enable us to keep a balanced budget.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Thanks. That makes sense. Thanks so much, Matt.
Thank you so much for your presentation, answering our questions. Seeing no one else on the roster, Madam Clerk, can we take public comment? Sorry, we're continuing with the presentation.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Please go ahead, Ms. Taylor.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Matt. Yes, and we have the slides back. Let me just get a little oriented. So now on to gas decommissioning. We have a few staff here. I'd just sort of like to say their names since they're working so hard on gas decommissioning for us. Karen Yates, a utility analyst here at SFPUC, and Connor Nakamura, who is our San Francisco fellow. So on to gas decommissioning. We last updated you on gas decommissioning at our July 2025 meeting. To recap, this is grounded in the city's Climate Action Plan. The Climate Action Plan, or CAP, provides a roadmap to achieving net zero carbon emissions in San Francisco by 2040. One of the strategies that the plan outlines is for a plan for the equitable decommissioning of the city's natural gas system. And so our actions in this space have included identifying potential sites in the city for the gas decommissioning pilot this year. And I will say we are also participating in the California Public Utilities Commission's long-term gas planning proceeding. The California Public Utilities Commission, or CPUC, has identified priority neighborhoods for these decarbonization zones in mid-December. These were based on census tracts with interested local partners, and 10% or more of gas mains due for replacement between 2028 and 2035. Now, each county was capped at no more than 25 zones. I will say that some counties that reached this cap, like Alameda County, were able to add back census tracts that had statewide Cal EnviroScreen scores of 25%, above 25%, and that's indicators of disadvantage. So statewide, there are 151 zones, and in this map, you'll see that there are three in San Francisco. There's one in Cal Hollow Marina, you see, sort of north, and then two in the Bayview. So coming up, from now through about mid-March, the gas utilities will be hosting outreach and listening sessions between, as I said, now and mid-March, and they'll report out on their findings as well as additional zone recommendations by April 1st. The CPUC is then expected to release a draft program design in May, and I will say that we and other parties to the proceeding have provided comments on the draft program design. The CPUC expects the statewide program to be established, likely with updated zones in July, but definitely if there are updated zones, they'll be included by December 2026. And I do want to note that I believe it was just yesterday that the CPUC just issued an FAQ or sort of an information sheet, which provides a very helpful update on their process. That concludes our update, and we are happy to answer your questions.
Commissioner Singh.
For that, I was curious if there's, for those zones, do you know, or have they mapped out what the sort of breakout of like residential, like homeowner versus renter, like populations, just because with decarbonization, I think when you're in rental housing, there's like sort of the additional concern, right, that you know, that there may be like accidental displacement potential or pass-through costs, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just like a different set of issues that homeowners face. They face their own issues, and then also tenants facing their own.
Right. That's a very good question. I am not quite certain about that. I don't know if, Karen, you're aware, but come up to the podium.
Hi, I'm Kieran. I'm a utility analyst for regulatory and legislative affairs. So the short answer is no. And I mean, you could probably like determine that by looking at the census tracts, because I think that data might be available at the census tract level. But these pilots aren't going to occur throughout the entire census tracts even. So the individual pipelines, like, we don't have the data on that scale. So we don't know this, like, for the individual projects, we won't know that.
Okay, thank you.
Commissioner Williams.
Can you explain for the people online what Cal EnviroScreen is? And then, did I see that the Marina District is on the labeled as PNZ? Is that?
Thank you. Good question. So my understanding is through the California EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, there's an office that is escaping me now, the name of that particular office. They have mapped out all of the census tracts within California and have sort of calculated indicators for each of these census tracts of, you know, sort of like relative environmental health, or in I believe they're called disadvantaged communities, which may not be the very best term to use, but they're sort of scaled on kind of how each county is scaled on how it sort of performs or exists on a number of these measures. So some might be, you know, kind of demographics of the name of the census tracts. Others might be sort of, I believe, proximity to sort of commercial areas or sort of polluting areas. And then I believe some other ones oh gosh, it just escaped me just now, but this is a tool that is used sort of across a number of programs to sort of determine and help prioritize sort of interventions, if that is sort of helpful to folks. And I think your other question was, and how did the Marina District, I don't actually know their CalEnviro screen score. We can probably get that to you, but I believe it may have been, that may have been selected because of the sort of maintenance schedule for the pipeline and maybe the relative gas use in that census tract, but if you have a sense of that, but you've got to come to the podium.
So part of the reason is they just didn't use CalEnviro screen as a limiting factor in designating the zones. They just used it as a way to add zones back in for census tracts that had hit that, or for counties that had hit that 25 census tract cap. So there's like, for example, a census tract in Berkeley that has a CalEnviro screen of score of 1, which is like one of the most advantaged communities in the state that was designated as a priority zone. So it's not using that as a limiting factor is the short answer.
I mean, sorry, I'll get over it. I think, it's interesting. As I understand it, it is fairly politicized how those are designated. So curious about those comparisons, and thank you for that illustration. I really appreciate it. But it's fascinating. Thanks.
Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks, Cheryl. This is always, it's always so great just to get like such a robust update from you guys. I wanted to ask a few questions. The first one was back on the slide about identifying those priority zones. It says that there has to be an indication of interest from a local partner. Can you tell me how a local partner is defined? Is that your agency? Or is it a community-based organization? What does that mean?
Another very good question. It is definitely not what we have defined. Is that that's okay, a CPUC yeah. definition?
Karen, do you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Details beyond that, I think we'd have to get back to you.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah.
And then I think my other question is, I'm reading, you know, that this is a lot of the process that's at CPUC. Of course, like these are, this is a process that is entirely governed and kind of like administered by PG&E as the owner of the current gas system, and it will ultimately come down. This is my understanding. You can feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, you guys, but it'll ultimately come down to whether or not PG&E chooses to continue to prioritize these zones out of the whole portfolio of zones that they could choose from across their service territory. What steps are you all taking to try to encourage the outcome where there's at least a pilot zone here? Because I think this is a really incredible opportunity for us to learn about this process with the help of the state and with the help of all these experts that are involved in this proceeding.
Definitely. Well, we are active participants in the proceeding, for one. I noted that we had registered our comments, sort of opening comments, and we sort of continue to take every opportunity to comment. Internally, we are conducting analysis, sort of using the sort of gas consumption and electric consumption data that we have. We are sort of determining, calculating, analyzing, you know, if sort of other parts of other neighborhoods within San Francisco might be some good candidates. And so we're sort of filling this information out sort of by attaching different sort of what we know about other program participations, other programs that are offered. So we remain active and engaged in the proceeding, and you know we plan to participate in the gas utility sort of open sessions, public sessions as well.
Great, thanks. I wanted to just make like an observation, a comment if I can, and I'll see if there's a question at the end, but I wanted to just note for my fellow commissioners, like, the importance of like thinking about where we prioritize this couldn't be higher, and I think we'll be especially informed by the continuing kind of like work that we try to do on understanding long-range planning around housing, public banking, energy planning, when it comes to the precarity like that a lot of San Franciscans face. You know, it's interesting to look at just like the zones that the CPUC process is coming up with. We know that in District 2, there's only 4% of people in District 2 on bill assistance, but over in District 10, you've got 23% of people on bill assistance. And when we look at the number of people being disconnected by PG&E for non-payment up in District 2, it's just one customer in the last 6 months that Cheryl reported on last time. But down in District 10, we've got 17 customers who are disconnected, right? So these are really significantly disparate communities, as everyone understands. And what I'm excited to see is like the opportunity that we have to show that a public agency like SFPUC and the Board of Supervisors can think about long-range planning, right? And the last note I wanted to make is that there are some really two big interesting things happening, right? SFPUC continues to try to pursue public power and owning our own electricity grid, which, as we heard earlier, would help create more predictable rates, more predictable bills for everyday people here in the city. And it also means that we're going to separate from the PG&E grid at the southern border of the city, which is a complex, time-intensive process. While we're down there doing that work in the future to upgrade our electric infrastructure, it also makes sense that as we start to think about decommissioning the gas system, which will increase the amount of electric load needed in that same process, that we think about overlapping these things rather than having to pay once to disconnect, pay twice to upgrade so that we can afford the gas switch to electric, and really think about these things as like a holistic opportunity where there's really significant cost savings to achieve for the city, not just from SFPUC's point of view, but also at a macroeconomic point of view, right? This involves people in their homes having to buy new appliances, having to make costly decisions about home upgrades. Often some of these new appliances come along with requirements to upgrade our electric breaker boxes and other things, which are costs that don't just fall on PUC, but fall on all of us individually. And so I'm excited just to like continue to meet that challenge and demonstrate that as a city, we can think together and we can think long-term and we can actually take into account the importance of making San Francisco a city for everybody. So thanks for you guys' presentation. Thanks for your work, Kieran and Connor, on like paying attention to this. I know it's a really, I don't know that I'll use the word fast moving, but in the scheme of the 130-year-old gas system, it is very fast moving, right? Anyway, thanks so much for the time that you spent with us today.
Thank you, Commissioner. Well said. Commissioner Singh.
Yeah, too, just a very quick observation, just extending on what I was discussing before about homeowners and tenants. It's really exciting to hear that San Francisco is going to be doing its own analysis and its own sort of work on that. And, you know, in my day job capacity, like I have been in touch with this is like folks in Los Angeles who are kind of looking at best practices for homeowners, for tenants, right? Like it's all the different needs, but particularly for, you know, low and middle income homeowners and tenants. And, you know, that they've started to kind of design or pass some regulation around making sure that like decarbonization can happen in a way that benefits everybody. I just definitely wanted to give a shout out to that work going on down there. I know we don't like to give, I don't want to give LA compliments, but we can beat them. But yes, I do see that work, that research work going on, and actually like they're passing policies, you know, like eviction protections, things like that, around decarbonization because they have a very ambitious decarb goal down there as well. So I definitely, if there's going to be sort of analyzing the different impacts and what people really need to benefit from decarb equitably, I definitely would just want to give a shout out to the fact that they're really already thinking that through down there.
Thank you, Commissioner. Thank you so much, Ms. Taylor, and to the whole team for being here and presenting, answering our questions. Seeing no one else on the roster, Madam Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the public who would like to speak now, this is your time to press star 3 if you're joining us online. Are there any members of the public that would like to speak in the chamber? Seeing none, we will go to our remote public call-in line. We have zero callers in the queue.
Thank you. Seeing no one else making public comment is now closed. And we do not need to take action on this matter. So, Madam Clerk, please call item 4.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item number 4 is the appointment of one member, term ending February 22nd, 2030, for seat 5.
Thank you. And I am pleased that Commissioner Singh is reapplying for a seat on this commission, and I'll offer... Oh, I was going to offer you the opportunity to speak about your reappointment, if you'd like to speak on your qualifications for seat 5. Please go ahead when you're ready.
All right. Sorry, I wasn't prepared for that. Yes, I have served on this. It's been an honor to serve on this commission since, 2018. You know, it's been, when I think about the scope of what, you know, LAFCO has worked on, it's really staggering when I think about, when someone asks me, what do you do on LAFCO? And, you know, I mean, we've done work around e-bikes, public banking, of course, the most important oversight of Clean Power SF, social housing, what else? Gig labor. there's so much work that we've done, and it's really not just like it's enriched me professionally as well. You know, as a legislative director, as a tenant advocate, which I have been for the last 10 years, and so. Yes, I have been doing this for a while. I've been on LAFCO for a while. I'm always just. Really fascinated. I'm always learning so much. I'm really fascinated by, you know, the work that we're doing, and particularly like the way that it interacts with like state legislation is something that I'm pretty qualified to understand because I do a lot of work in Sacramento in my professional capacity. You know, I've been doing a lot of policy work around the issues that come up before this committee, this commission, but including public banking, including social housing, but certainly not exclusive to those things. I really would love the chance to serve another 4 years.
Thank you so much. Do any of my colleagues have questions? All right, seeing no one on the roster. Madam Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on item number 4? Seeing none, we will move to a remote call-in line. We have zero callers in the queue, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Seeing no one in the roster or queue, public comment is now closed. And we do need to take action on this matter. I'd like to make a motion to reappoint Shanti Singh to seat 5 of the Local Agency Formation Commission. Is there a second?
Second.
Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
And on the motion stated by Commissioner Fielder, Commissioner Sevier? Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder?
Aye.
Fielder, aye. You have 3 ayes.
Thank you. And the motion is approved to reappoint Shanti Singh to the public member seat 5 of LAFCO. Madam Clerk, please call item number 5.
Yes, item number 5 is the executive officer report.
All right. Now we have the executive officer's report from Mr. Samurai. Executive officer, you have the floor.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. I have a few updates for this commission today. The first is on the Municipal Housing Agency pilot study. The RFP closed yesterday, and LAFCO has received 6 proposals. Just as a reminder, this is the study to determine the recommended structure of the Municipal Housing Agency pilot to create and manage cross-subsidy mixed-income city-owned housing. 6 great applicants, and next steps are to convene a panel to review those proposals and determine the winning proposal, which I hope to bring back to this commission at our March meeting. My second update is on the policy analyst recruitment process. We have received over 60 applications for the policy analyst position. The applications are being reviewed and ranked right now. My goal when I presented to this commission in November was to have a contract ready for you. I did not expect 60 applicants. This will take a lot longer to go through, which is fortunate for LAFCO. And next steps are to convene a panel and conduct the interviews, and I hope to bring the final selection of that panel to this commission on March 20th at our regular meeting. Just to update you on the forward calendar, on the March 20th meeting, we will approve the proposed budget for next year. Hopefully approve the LAFCO policy analyst panel decision and the Municipal Housing Agency pilot study contract via panel decision. We'll also have an update on the Green Bank work in the city. At our May meeting, we'll approve the final budget and have our first update from the Municipal Housing Agency study. And then in July, we'll also get further updates on this study. Any questions?
I just wonder if you have had a chance to take a look at the next year's budget at all and kind of how's it looking?
We actually looked at it at the November meeting to get approval for the policy analyst position. With the statutory amount that LAFCO has to receive from the general fund, we will have funding for both the both positions, the executive officer and the policy analyst. And our funding for the municipal housing study comes from an add back from 2022. And so that's a separate stream of funding that's covered. So for the next year, LAFCO will be funded and we'll be able to complete the study.
Understood. Thanks for reminding me. Commissioner Williams.
Yes, it's exciting to hear that there have been submissions for the RFP. I'm wondering, is there any way we could take a look at them or is that not part of the procedure?
No.
Okay. No. Thanks.
Another question is, who would be eligible to serve on the hiring panel?
I will review the applications, develop, put together a list of the firms that applied and the lead staff. Once we determine that, we'll start asking panel members, you know, people who work for the city or used to work for the city, knowledgeable in housing, to make sure they have no conflict of interest with either the firms or the individuals listed. And at that point, we will convene a panel to actually score the proposals.
Understood. And same question for the panel for hiring the policy analysts.
There is a slightly more flexibility with that. But similarly, we will put together a list of the final applicants, those who meet the minimum qualifications, and then convene a panel to make sure that there's no conflict of interest.
Okay. And then the process for hiring, I imagine, involves face-to-face interviews, whether that's virtual or in-person. And
yes.
Then is there a civil service kind of element to this as well?
This is a temporary exempt position, so no, there is no civil service requirement.
Okay, thank you. All right, those are all my questions. Anyone else? Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks, Khaled, for the report. I'm curious if you, and maybe this is a question that we should talk about like offline, but I'm curious about like what the potential work plan for the analyst looks like and how you're thinking about balancing like the multiple and kind of distinct like areas of focus that we handle in this body.
Absolutely. So just a reminder, our work plan for this last year and the following year will likely include three areas. To continue our Clean Power SF oversight duties assigned to us by the board and accepted by this commission. to continue to support the city in developing a green bank and subsequently a public bank, and to conduct the Municipal Housing Agency study. Depending on the expertise of the policy analysts, given the number of candidates, wherever they fit best, they'll be plugged in. But also at LAFCO, there's going to only be two of us, so we'll both be involved in all aspects of the work.
Okay, thanks, Kellen.
Thank you so much. Seeing no one else on the roster, Madam Clerk, or do you have anything else to present?
No, Chair, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Madam Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the public who would like to speak, now is your time to press star 3 if you're joining us online. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on this matter? Seeing none in the chamber, excuse me, we will go to the remote public call-in line. We have 0 callers in the queue.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Seeing no one else making public comment, public comment is now closed, and we do not need to take action on this matter. So, Madam Clerk, please call item 6.
Item number 6 is the approval of a resolution commending Commissioner Isaac Sevier.
Thank you. And this is a very just hard because you have such, Commissioner Sevier has had such an impact on our ability to really deliver on one of our main mandates, which is to oversee Clean Power SF. And Commissioner Sevier is leaving this commission at the end of their current term, but I'm so grateful for the expertise and the passion and the questions that you've brought to this work. And not only is Commissioner Sevier an incredible mind when it comes to public utilities, but also an investor-owned utilities, but also just an amazing person and colleague. And we will miss you. I want to give the floor to Vice Chair Williams.
This is certainly bittersweet, Commissioner Sevier. The impact that you've had on this commission, you can't really put words to it. You are incredibly talented and gifted and thoughtful and kind and so generous. And I have learned so much from you, and I hope to continue that, as I'm sure we will. But I was looking at your list of accolades, you know, founder of a national nonprofit organization, supporting local campaigns to expand community ownership of local control of utilities, founding director of a frontline-led energy fund accelerating equitable electrification while securing healthy housing, clean energy jobs, and community-driven economic opportunities. I mean, the list goes on. And it's a sad loss for the commission, but really grateful for all of your contributions. And yeah, thank you so much.
And Commissioner Sevier.
Through the chair.
Understood. Okay. Commissioner Singh first.
Yes, I also just wanted to echo, I remember I was so excited when I found out that you were going to join LAFCO, and I'm very sad that you're leaving, but I know that your expertise your boundless expertise, especially on energy and utilities. I've learned more from you than almost anybody about these issues, and I know that you know, you're going to continue to be doing amazing things in this space, and that we might be leaning on you and hopefully hearing from you in public comment, maybe every time. So you know, I mean, I wish you the best of luck in like all of your endeavors. Really excited to see what you'll do next, but you will be sorely missed.
Well said. And Commissioner Sevier.
Thanks, you guys. I mean, it's it is really bittersweet. I have not been looking forward to this day at all. And so I just want to express some gratitude. I mean, I think the first person I have to thank is you, Chair, because you invited me to think about joining this body and really encouraged my interest in public service. So thanks for all of the hours that you spent just talking to me about what it would be like to serve on LAFCO and introducing me to what it looks like to really serve the city. You are a tremendous model for what that looks like in practice, and it's been some big shoes to fill here in seat five. and I wanna also thank my fellow commissioners, both those who are present here today and then the ones that aren't. Hope and Shanti both have been just incredible in terms of helping me feel welcome and teaching me like how does this whole process work. There's nowhere else with this level of formality in my day-to-day life, and so just learning the ropes of the process has been its own adventure. And I have to thank also Inder, who's not here, and Khalid, who is, for just really generously spending a lot of time teaching me how do we adhere to the principles of like open and transparent public service? Like, how are we thinking really clearly about what we do in public and what we do that's not on the mic here in terms of making sure that we're serving the city really well? It's been a real honor to think about what the future of San Francisco looks like from the small corner of the universe that we have here in LAFCO. And I meant what I was saying earlier in that I think it's a really important place to think about the medium and long range opportunities in the city, not just to meet the crises of the moment, but to think about how San Francisco continues to serve the people that live here amidst all of the tumultuousness and volatility that's happening at both the state and federal levels. We have just such a tremendous city here, and as I've talked with other city leaders up and down the West Coast over the last couple of years, it's been really remarkable how local public service, I think, is really leading the way and showing what it looks like. In Seattle, they incorporated a new social housing developer a couple of years ago. In Portland, Oregon, they have been really trying to revitalize and reshape what it looks like to do city governance that's responsive to the people in Portland. They have a progressive caucus now that is really trying to drive home some of the same priorities that we have here in the city. As Shanti was mentioning in LA, I think there's some tremendous work going on to really think about what the future of cities in climate catastrophe, increased economic insecurity, and all of these other big infrastructural problems we have, what that future looks like. And I'm excited to continue to support you guys and the city from my role as an outside advocate. And as someone trying to link a lot of these things together across the West Coast and across the country. So anyway, I'm very long-winded. Thanks for letting me serve with you on LAFCO and selecting me, I think like 18 months ago now. The time has really flown by, but this won't be the last you've heard from me, so thanks so much.
I'm very glad to hear that, and thank you so much for your service. And never long-winded, it's really important that we have folks like yourself to represent the public. So thank you. And Madam Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on item number 6? Seeing none, we will move to our remote call-in line. We have 0 callers in the queue.
All right, seeing no one making public comment, public comment is now closed. And we do need to take action on this matter. I'd like to make a motion to approve the resolution commending Commissioner Isaac Sevier. Is there a second?
Second.
And Madam Clerk, please call the roll.
And excuse me, on that motion, Commissioner Sevier?
Aye.
Sevier, aye. Commissioner Williams?
Aye.
Williams, aye. Commissioner Fielder?
Aye.
Fielder, aye. You have 3 ayes. It does seem we're voting, but that we only have 3, and that's the quorum, so motion passes.
All right, the motion passes. Madam Clerk, please call item number 7.
Item number 7 is general public comment. Members of the public may address the commission on matters that are within their jurisdiction and not on today's agenda.
And Madam Clerk, let's open this to general public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak in the chamber? Seeing none, we will move to our remote call-in line, and we have 0 callers in the queue.
Seeing no one making public comment is now closed. We do not need to take action on this matter. Madam Clerk, please call item number 8.
Item number 8 is future agenda items.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Colleagues, any future agenda items to note? Seeing no one on the roster, Madam Clerk, let's open this up for public comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak on this matter? Seeing none, we will move to our remote call-in line. We have zero callers in the queue.
Thank you. And seeing no one making public comment is now closed. We do not need to take action on this matter. Madam Clerk, is there any other business before us today?
That completes our business.
There being no further business, we are adjourned.